Manx Radio Sport.
A very good evening on Manx Radio, crystal clear DAB and AM 1368. This is Saturday Sport Classified, the final Saturday Sport Classified of the current season. Taking a look at the footballing action taking place on the Isle of Man today, as well as what's been going on in the international netball competition taking place at the NSC in Douglas. And what's more, with a chance to reflect a little bit on the last few months and the respective campaigns across football, rugby and hockey, we hear from our respective correspondents to get their thoughts on the season so far and what might be to come when we get to the next campaign in a few months' time. But first of all, we bring you the classified results from today, Saturday the 18th of May 2024, starting with football. The Ascot Hotel Junior Cup Final. Ramsey 4, Rushen United 1. In rugby, one game in a friendly match, Ramsey 37, Northwich 25. The 2024 Europe Netball Open. France 59, Switzerland 25. Gibraltar 39, Malta 29. Northern Ireland 48, Isle of Man 35. And Republic of Ireland 1, United Arab Emirates 4 is a latest score. Those are your classified results for this final Saturday Sport Classified programme of the coming of this current season, Saturday the 18th of May 2024. Well, we don't have the usual hectic amount of football fixtures at this time of year, but nevertheless crucially important to the teams taking part and absolutely crucial today for two of the Isle of Man's combination sides with the Ascot Hotel Junior Cup Final taking place in glorious conditions down at the Bowl. And our man Tony Meppen was down there this afternoon. Tony, before we get to the result very quickly, what a day for a cup final in Manx football.
Absolutely, Rob. And we've had some rough winter weather thrown at us throughout the season. But certainly today was a joy to watch. And you could see everyone sort of massed on the far side at the bowl there. Ramsey to the left, Rushen to the right, enjoying the sunshine, enjoying a good game of football. And that's how it should be. So maybe we need to change football, Rob, from winter to summer. And then we'll have this good weather. We wouldn't have a problem with the pitches. But today, yeah, it was superb. That's what we're in it for.
Ramsey to the left of him, Rushen to the right. There's yeah. Tony Meppen stuck in the middle of them.
Exactly.
And, well, what a game it was as well that you were treated to, and everyone there sounded like a fantastic atmosphere down there and great crowds in the sunshine. And Ramsey up against Rushen United, the top two in Canada Life Combination 1 this season. Ramsey crowned champions. Rushen United were the defending champions from the previous season after that phenomenal perfect record of 22 wins in 22 games. Ramsey, late last month, crowned Combination 1 champions this season up against a Rushen side who maybe might have wanted a bit of revenge if they could find it. But again, Tony, Ramsey showing their quality today, a clinical performance beating Rushen United by 4-1.
Yeah, and it could have been a lot more, Rob, to be honest with you, because Rushen, certainly in the second period, didn't create too many chances. Probably the man guilty of a few misses was Darren Tartar, but it was his sort of, if you like, foul that sort of put the score safe for them, because he was fouled for the penalty, and that was the third goal when that was scored by Ryan Kinraid. But in the first half, it was nice and tight, and it was the number 11 for Ramsey, Alfie Scott, who started off. Great finish with his left foot. Saw where the goalkeeper was. He was in a good position, Tony Harris, but couldn't do much about it. It was precision by Alfie. But then the equaliser was scored by Stephen Harris. Good cross in from the right-hand side. And Stephen there shot down to the floor. I think it was meant, and beat the goalkeeper, and in it went 1-1. But the second one was from the substitute, number 17, Connor Bloomer, who did really well when he came on, caused quite a few problems. But, you know, his goal was sublime, and fair play to him, and it just settled everything for Ramsey. Rushen couldn't really create too many chances. And then it was the third goal, which was the penalty. Darren Tartar was in. He was infringed, and it was Ryan Kinraid who stepped up. Morton who stepped up to score it. And then the fourth one was a late substitute in the second half, and it was Ferret Aegon who got the goal. And it was a great finish, great move through the middle. He read it well, kept himself onside, went to the right, and hummed in on the goalkeeper and smashed it past him. So great result. Ramsey thoroughly deserve it. Rushen not at the races today, unfortunately.
And I've just seen a stat as well today that that's the first time that Ramsey have secured the combination league and cup double for the first time since the 1982-1983 season.
Yeah, and fair play to them. And it was a great interview at the end by Stephen Leese, because very complimentary towards his team, to the club, which is nice. The coaching staff right the way through, who have played a part, because as they said, they're a club. We're not two teams. And, you know, they've had their bit of silverware this season. And Ramsey's first team go next Friday. But certainly looking at the young players that they've got in there today, Rob, it bodes well for the future. And, you know, when you look at Ayr winning the championship yesterday as well, the Northern teams at the moment have got the bragging rights.
Indeed they have, after Ayr United, of course, won the Canada Life Men's Premier League last night as well. But just to go on to a point, you brought me onto quite nicely, the post-match interview you had with Steve Leese, the Ramsey combi manager, and he was very quick to start with, wanted to highlight the work that all the people associated with the club do, not just the players and the coaching staff, but everyone involved in it as well. And clearly very full of a lot of praise for the people that make it all happen behind the scenes.
Yeah, there's some amazing people in there. And I look at people like Dave Perry, Ray Rowley, they played when I played. And you've got loads of other people, Malcolm Kelly, who've played a massive part. And they've all just got it together. Jonathan Leese now is the chairman. And, you know, credit to them, the way they've stuck at it. And, you know, it's mostly done by Ramsey boys that are in there. There's a couple of Douglas guys in there. And it's all about the friendship part, Rob. If you have a happy team, then what happens on the field is coming from the ability of the players. But it just keeps everyone in a good place. And, you know, now the merry-go-round starts of players possibly going somewhere else. But, you know, Ramsey have been formidable as a club this year, and they deserve it. Cal Cup semi as well. Well done.
And for Rushen United, just missing out on both the league and cup fronts this season. Of course, a 4-1 defeat today in the Ascot Hotel Junior Cup final, and second behind Ramsey in combination one in the league campaign this season. But what positives can Rushen United take, even though they've just missed out on the league and cup honours?
Yeah, we spoke to David Ward, the manager, at the end of it, and he said that they just didn't play today, which was right. They've got one or two sort of experienced people in there. Ted Pepper, one who's captain. And you've also got Andy Baker, who tried to glue it together, because you could see when they conceded that second goal, their heads just dropped. But, you know, Luke Roberts, again, he must be close to winning the combination one leading goal scorer. And Lockie Denham's been playing in the first team. Tony Harris is a really good goalkeeper. Charlie Jackson's played first team. So all across the board, you know, Rushen are in transition as well, with younger players coming through. And sort of today, just didn't come together for them.
Well, congratulations to Ramsey Combi team there. Ramsey, the 2024 Ascot Hotel Junior Cup champions. Well, that might be the end of the road for the Junior Cup competition, but there is still football to play and still honours up for grabs with the selection games taking place next week. If you missed it earlier today on Saturday Live with Paul Moran at 12:30, we had our guest Paul Henry up at the studios earlier today to do the draw for the semi-finals of the Paul Henry Gold Cup, with both semi-finals to take place this coming Monday. So the draw for the Paul Henry Gold Cup semi-finals were Foxdale versus Onchan, and Douglas High School Old Boys versus Castletown, both those games to be played this coming Monday. So, Tony, very quickly just take a look at those, and discussed a little bit before, but for those who missed it, what were your initial thoughts on that semi-final draw for this competition?
I was relieved for a start, because Douglas High School Old Boys haven't got a pitch now, and neither have Onchan. So they've been drawn away, which that Old Boys Castletown game, that'll be played at Castletown. That was sort of agreed if the draw came out that way. But certainly Foxdale against Onchan. Foxdale, league winners. Onchan licking their wounds because they didn't win it. It's their dinner tonight, so enjoy the fun, and you know, the trophies will be presented to the players of the year for that club. But Foxdale at the moment, I think they're going to take some stopping, but certainly David Rees and everyone else involved with Onchan will be looking to see if they can get that away from them. Old Boys against Castletown. Castletown have dipped a little bit because they were one of the favourites at the start of the season, so it's up to Gary Sansbury to try and get the best out of his team. But Douglas High School Old Boys have been in good form, and they only just lost out last night to Onchan in Division 2, 3-2, so Old Boys are right on it as well.
And just for clarity as well, the reason that Douglas High School Old Boys and Onchan don't have their pitches at the moment is because of preparations ahead of the Alaman TT races starting next Monday, the 27th of May. Well, Foxdale versus Onchan, The last time these two met was in that crunch Division 2 title deciding game before Foxtel went on to win the league, and everyone expected a really close game, but the scoreline, Foxtel were 3-0 winners there. You'd imagine Onken would be out for just a little bit of revenge. Both sides already confirmed to be going up to the Premier League next season, but maybe just from a mentality standpoint, it might just stand them in better stead if they can get one over Foxtel this time.
Well, it is, and certainly Onken disappointed with that sort of result against them, because if they had won that, it was totally different. And, you know, credit to Onken, because they were relegated with Douglas High School Old Boys and they've bounced back, which is takes some doing that, Rob. You know, Foxtel, it's all just come together for them. And when you look at players that they've got, Onken, Adam McCulloch, you've also got Tom Creer in there as well. You've got the two Dawson boys. So it looks good right the way through for Onken, and they're young players, so they're going to be there for a long, long time. And, you know, I'm sure there's one or two players that would join them. But, you know, Foxtel, it's a season not to forget for them, because they've worked so hard over the years to try and get promotion, and they've done it. And here they are into their second final of the season as well.
Indeed. Well, those aren't the only football fixtures taking place during next week as well. There's also a crunch clash in Combination 2 coming up.
Yeah, it is. And fair play to both clubs. They've agreed to play this on Monday. This is going to be played on Corinthians pitch. Unfortunately, you know, their pitch has gone at Blackberry Lane, ready for camping. Onken's is now Onken Park. It's summertime. So, we've accommodated them up there. And, you know, they're going to go for everything, because when you look at that league table in Combination 2, it's really tight, because the sides, so Onken and Douglas High School Old Boys, still have a league game to play on the Wednesday as well. And it's Old Boys have got Foxtel to play and Onken have got Jim's to play. So it's not done and dusted on Monday. It might be closer, so we'll wait and see. But we just couldn't leave it any longer with the Paul Henry final coming up on the following Sunday.
And of course, during next week as well, the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup final, 7 p.m. kickoff at the Bowl on Friday night. Laxey versus Ramsey. Now, in the semi-final stages, these sides respectively knocked out Peel and Ayr United, who, of course, are the title contenders way out front in the Canada Life Men's Premier League, before Ayr United took the silverware on Friday night. And I think there were maybe a couple of eyebrows raised that neither Peel or Ayr United were going to be in this final, and the fact that Laxey and Ramsey have done a huge job in eliminating such high-quality opposition in the respective semi-finals. How open is this final, Tony?
I think it's wide open, because we were talking about it today at the Junior Cup final, and it's hard to predict a winner on it, because St Mary's found it sort of really difficult against sort of an Ayr United team. But Ayr against, you know, sort of Ramsey, it was just one of those games. I watched it, and it just didn't go together for them. And I thought Ayr were going to really struggle last night, but we'll come to that later. But Peel, I think it was about chances that they had, that chances they couldn't finish, that cost them dearly. And I think Laxey's team that they had out is looking a lot stronger. Joe Walters is back from injury, which is great. Jordan Cooper has been dogged with his back injury right the way through the season, has come back at the right time. And it just sort of gives them Brody Patience as well, gives them the opportunity to get goals now, as where before they were struggling just trying to finish teams off. And they're the holders, aren't they? So they're looking to win it again. But, you know, Ramsey have had a great season, and you wouldn't bet against either. It's going to be on the day. Who's got the best sort of team? They both sort of cancel each other out. It's going to be a heck of a game, and I'm looking forward to it on the Friday.
And fingers crossed we get some of the sunshine that we've got from today. Might help the atmosphere and the attendances at that final. Laxey versus Ramsey, the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup final, 7 p.m. kickoff next Friday at the Bowl. Well, now seems like the right time, given that we've taken a look at the final that's taken place today and had a little bit of a look ahead to the football still coming up over the next week or so. Given that the majority of the league campaigns have concluded across the respective Isle of Man football divisions, let's just take a little look back at these divisions respectively. We'll start with the Canada Life Men's Premier League. Ayr United champions just pipping Peel. Maroun and Braddon relegated this season. And Tony, those are subjects that we've covered already. But outside of that, who do you think, team-wise, has maybe stood out a little bit in the Canada Life Men's Premier League this season, and why?
Stood out. I think Ramsey have certainly stood out, because you know, they've sort of brought new players in, younger players, and they've developed really well very quickly. I looked at one today, Alfie Scott. I remember him. I think he turned 16, was it last year? And I thought, yeah, he can play, and you can see that. So he's got a bright future in there, and Ramsey will be tough with that. St Mary's, you can't forget, Rob. You know, 2 years ago they were in Division 2. and to come in and challenge for that fourth place with, you know, a team that really is St Mary's players, you know, credit to them. But, you know, Russian had a poor start but got it back together. Corinthians, it's a rebuild job, we know that. But Union Mills, when you look at the foot of the table, Rob, Union Mills worked so hard towards the end to stay in that league. But the one that has to go out to is St George's. I think everyone thought they were done. But the 6 points that they got in the end, three against their sort of Corinthians and then three against Maroun, was the points that have kept them up.
And just a quick score update from the 2024 Europe Netball Open, the end of quarter one in the latest game. It is Republic of Ireland 10, United Arab Emirates 19. And just for a bit of context around that, the losing side in this game will play the Manx Rams tomorrow in the finals day on Sunday. The winner will go up against Northern Ireland, ranked 11th in the world, and beat the Manx Rams earlier today in Sunday's games tomorrow. OK, turning back to the football, let's take a look at DPS Limited Division 2. Foxdale and Onchan, we know, will be heading up to the Canada Life Men's Premier League next season. Foxdale champions for the first time since the 95-96 season, and Onchan finishing 4 points behind them. And bottom of the table, Pulrose United, just the 3 points for them from their games so far and just the one victory. But I just actually wanted to touch on that quickly around Pulrose United. We, of course, had Paul Henry in as a guest for the Paul Henry Gold Cup draw earlier today. And one thing that he did point out was, although it has been a challenging season for Pulrose United, he was very quick to praise those around the club for still sticking with it even through a challenging campaign.
Yeah, they have, and that's what Paul Rose have had to do, is just to work hard. They've only got one team, so they've got a limited amount of players to sort of pick from. And, you know, when you look at that, they played 22 games. There's still an inquiry going on with one of the games, but to just have those 3 points can sort of knock confidence off players there and don't turn up for training and stuff. But Paul Rose have always had, you know, the players there to, you know, get a team out and challenge for it and keep things nice and tidy. And they work ever so hard, Rob, and the luck has got to change somewhere along the line. But, you know, Pulrose now, last two or three seasons, have, you know, found it hard to get players. So it's something that they'll be looking again in the summer to see if they can build the numbers that they've got.
Very well. Well, outside of Pulrose United and, of course, the top two, as mentioned, Foxdale and Onchan making their way up to the top tier for next season, I'll ask you the same question again. In DPS Limited Division 2, have there been any standout performances elsewhere in the league, do you think?
I think certainly Colby, the start of the season, what was it, played 6-1-6. And, they were
flying start to the
absolutely
season.
Flying. And when you look at that league position for them, fifth, that's pretty good, to be fair, because, again, only a few seasons ago, they only had one team. So they've worked hard, and credit to them. Michael, we just were talking about them, Paul Henry Gold Cup and possibly even promotion, but it's fell by the wayside towards the end, so that's unfortunate for them. But Rams Youth Centre probably disappointed finishing eighth, but again, they'll build on that. But when you look at Douglas District, Governors, Jims and Paul Rose, credit to them. They've improved big time. The squads have got younger, and they'll be looking to push for next season. But the one probably disappointment is in there, I feel sorry for them, as Castletown. I just thought that team that they had was the team that could get them promoted as champions.
They actually finished 11 points behind Onchan in second.
Yeah, and it just all went at the wrong time for them. And towards the end of the season, they had some costly defeats in there. But a big club, and Gary Sansby and the boys down there will be looking to see if they can rebuild and put a challenge on next season.
And of course, Castletown in the mix potentially for the Paul Henry Gold Cup. Definitely. Into those semi-finals. So maybe light at the end of the tunnel for the for the Southerners this season. We'll wait and see. Okay, moving on to Canada Life Combination 1, of course, has been the subject of the day, with the top two finishes in Canada Life Combination 1, the champions Ramsey and runners-up Russian United playing today in the Ascot Hotel Junior Cup Final. Ramsey 4-1 winners in the Junior Cup Final at the Bowl this afternoon. Well, Ramsey, we've already spoken about the qualities they've shown this season, finishing 7 points clear of Russian United at the top of the table. But again, Tony, standout performances in Canada Life Combination 1 elsewhere?
St Mary's. I'll go for St Mary's. I think at the start of the season, they were right up at the top of the table, going really well. But we always sensed that Russian would creep through because they had a disastrous start, and that's what happened. Ramsey were very, very consistent indeed. But Air United, that's a massive plus for that club to finish third, because, you know, they were middle, bottom half for a lot of the season, and then towards the end came good and got the points to get them through. But Union Mills as well, I think they had aspirations at the start of the season to possibly finish top three, but they finished up in fifth place. And then it's a lot of young players in Laxey's team, Corinthians team. You know, Maroun had some good players in there as well to put challenge on, But St John's slipped down a little bit. I thought they would have been good candidates because when you look at league tables over the last couple of years, they've been there or thereabouts. But Peel, you look at that one and you say 11th place. How did they finish that when they won the Cal Cup? Those young players are like 16, 17 years of age. So that's going to be something to watch next season as those players develop. And with the experience of the first team as well, can only learn from the best.
Very well. And then last but certainly not least, DPS Limited Combination 2. Now, this league hasn't been completed as of yet. The way it stands at the top at the moment, Onken currently top after 18 games on 46 points. Behind them, Douglas High School Old Boys on 44 points, also for 18 games. Foxdale and Jim's second from bottom and bottom, respectively, also still have a game to play each. But so, Tony, all is not said and done, but again, from a Combination 2, just as it stands at the moment, outside both Onken and Douglas High School, Old Boys still battling away at the top there. Who's made an impression, do you think?
I think Douglas High School Old Boys certainly have made an impression. We always expected it from Onken because they were relegated, they were strong. And when you look at just the points tally at the moment, Rob, just say for talking sake on Monday, Onken win it, then that's them done as far as I'm concerned. It's 49 and the most Old Boys can get is 47. Now, if it's drawn, then it will go down to the two remaining games being played on Wednesday. So, a lot to go on that one. Douglas Athletic, it was one of those, Rob, we've been criticised at the FA for allowing them just to enter one team. I've looked back at the team sheets at the start of the season and, you know, the players are totally different to what they've got now. So they finished in that third spot and hopefully they'll have two teams in next year. You know, Michael challenged well in that one, but Ramsey Youth Centre again just slipped off a little bit because they're usually one of the strong teams in Combination 2. But, you know, the rest of them again have worked hard. Jim's, you know, struggled at times to get a team out. Hopefully they're good to go on Wednesday. But again, it's trying to get players back in. They've got a good club. They've got a good little pitch down there. So it's all down in the summer months to see what they can do to gain people in.
Indeed. Well, well done to all the teams across the divisions for completing their respective seasons, the ones who have completed them, and those with games, whether in league and cup, still to play. All the very best, and may the best team win across the respective competitions. Well, Tony, just a bit of a wider picture, I guess, around Alabama football going into the summer months. I mean, one thing that always seems to pop up at the start of the season is around recruitment with regards to officials. There was a bit of a drive before the start of the season to try and get more people in. So going into the summer, do you believe this will be a consideration again before the next campaign?
I think it's going to be worse than last season, to be honest with you, Rob, because there's already one or two referees indicated that they won't be officiating this year. Unfortunately, some of the main sort of reasons are just players, management, everything on their backs that they don't need to do it. I know the referees in control with cards and stuff like that, but it's come to a stage where just they don't need the hassle. And I've seen it, Rob, it's getting worse because they're challenging for everything when they know it's, say, a penalty and they're saying, that's not a penalty, ref. You can see it quite clear. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. You know, Paul Hodgkinson, who's the referee's development officer, who actually, at the moment, is going to be on TV. He's on TV now because he's the fourth official at the Bolton game at Wembley in the playoffs. So that just shows you where he's going.
And can I just say, you had me sold for a second there. For those who can't see this, Tony pointed to a screen here in the studio behind me. That game was not on that screen.
I'm looking at the time because evidently it kicked off at 4:30 and I was just checking and we're coming up to half time now. So credit to Paul. We wish him well. He's done so much for referees on the Isle of Man. And I know Rob Slinger, who's one of the sort of high flyers at the moment, has been so complimentary to him. But to lose his sort of knowledge and just everything about him, his aura, is going to be hard to replace. But he's still there for us to help us when we can. And we'll be looking for a new referees development officer in the summer. But yeah, it's going to be a big job. And anyone out there who's thinking of hanging the boots up, come and try the whistle. Because when you look at some people like today, I think it was Joe Wall, Caelum Raby, and it was on the far side, Nick Cowell. They're all new officials this season. And credit to the Referees Society for appointing them start off. And just overall, I watched them and it was brilliant. I thought Joe in the middle had total control. Credit to them. 1 year into refereeing, as far as I know, and they're coming up with performances like that. It's good news.
Just finally on this point, on quite a serious note, like you say, that you believe that there's going to be more people stepping away. You've spoken about the change that Paul Hodgkinson's going to have, and there will have to be a search for a new referee development officer there. So that's quite a big hole to fill, along with just trying to get enough officials going forward. How big a job is that for the FA over the summer?
Absolute huge job, because it's one of the biggest key points that the FA have got to try and sort out. And the age band is too high at the top, as in 60, 70 year olds officiating, and they're hanging in there doing it for the good of the game, really, because they know we're short. So we need to try and sort something out, and I'm pretty certain that the FA will start sooner than later to try and recruit a new referees development officer. And as I say, players out there, when I look at Caelan Raby and Aaron Raby, I've known them for years playing football, and they took up refereeing because we were short. And the amount of compliments that we have about those two guys, Nick Cal, we had a written sort of compliment and we sent it on to him. And it shows that the people out there are getting trained in the right manner. And suddenly, within a year, they're being considered as referees that have been here for a long, long time. That's superb to see.
And just very quickly, finally, we've got around 2 minutes before we move on. But from your side of things, speaking as a football correspondent for Manx Radio, outside of all the drama on the pitch, titles, cups being won, what has stood out for you this season? What do you feel most proud of seeing in Manx football this season?
I look at the finals. The finals have been absolutely immense. Today there was over 400 people at the Junior Cup. When I look at the Railway Cup and stuff like that, up to 1,000 people. So that's brilliant. And I always say, when I watched it today, I had to leave the FA headquarters to get up here for you, Rob. And the Ramsey people are still on the pitch and everything else. That's nearly an hour after the game is finished. So it's just great to see. There's a lot of knockers out there who just sort of go at football for any reason. There's a proposal going forward that we change the league structure with it. That's up to the clubs to make that decision. It won't be the FA's decision. But I don't think football's in a bad place, like a lot of people out there are saying. At the end of the day, without players, clubs can't field teams. So it's a bit of responsibility from the players as well. I accept holidays and commitments and works like that, but sometimes players just dip in and dip out when the club needs them. So, maybe players can have a look at that as well and commit for their clubs.
Well, Tony, just before we wrap things up on the footballing side, I think I'm sure I speak on behalf of a lot of people where I say it's been an absolute pleasure once again to have you in your reporting capacity. And, of course, still football to come, must be pointed out. But in terms of Saturday Sport Classified, of course, with this show, taking its summer break after today, I think I speak on behalf of a lot of people where it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on board again this season.
Thank you very much, Rob, and hopefully I'll be back next year. But I know you'll want to know, when are we thinking of starting the season? The clubs like the first Saturday in September. I'm going to try and get it if we can. I think it's the 31st of August. I just think we can squeeze two games in before when we're officially supposed to start, but that'll be the club's decision. We can sneak a night game in. We just need to try and get a bit momentum at the start of the season to stop this sort of overload that we've got in the final sort of couple of months.
Well, plenty for the Alabama FA to think about over the summer. But in the meantime, Tony Meppham, for the final time on Saturday Sport Classified this season, an absolute pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Rob.
Manx Radio Sport.
Well, with this being the final Saturday Sport Classified of the current season, this is also a chance to look back on what has been another busy campaign in Manx rugby. The likes of Douglas, as well as Vagabonds men's and ladies squads, have once again undertaken their respective journeys in the English clubs' championships. There's also been competition on and off island for teams like Ramsey, Southern Nomads and Western Vikings to get their teeth into over the last few months. So now, with a chance to reflect on their ventures, I spoke with our rugby correspondent Dave Christian, who's cast his eye over how he thinks our island rugby teams have fared and what may be to expect for the next season, starting with Douglas.
Yeah, it's difficult when they don't perform to their best regularly. And I spoke quite early on in the season to coach Phil Kringle, and Phil said that it's great to be able to play well. It's better to be able to play well and win, and you don't often get the two things to happen. So Douglas burst onto the scene at the start of the season and suffered a number of defeats. I think it was three or maybe four on the bounce before they finally got their first win. But they were very close. They were picking up bonus points along the way. So we knew that they weren't too far away from it. And even probably beginning of late January, early February, they were one or two wins away from being in the top five. So they've made some big strides this season. Yes, they tailed off a bit towards the end. Yes, the season's very long. And yes, they picked up a number of injuries in key places. We know they're advertising for a rugby development officer this summer. They're hoping to get somebody in there who'll be able to play as well. And they've also lost a couple of their players. I think Brett Pike has disappeared off back to New Zealand. And they're going to miss him. He was a utility player, if you like, in the back line. He was in there at fullback or anywhere in the centres as well. So missing somebody of Brett Pike's sort of ability is going to hamper them a little bit next season. Hopefully they can recruit well during the summer and then maybe make a concerted assault on the top few places in Regional 2 Northwest. It's at level six in the rugby pyramid. They've got ambition to play at level five, but they are starting to get into the territory where players are being paid. And that always raises a difficult question for clubs. If you are going to pay your players, who are you going to pay? How much are you going to pay them? How does that affect the team if not everybody's being rewarded for their efforts? There's a whole nasty can of worms sitting underneath that rock, and I'm not sure Douglas will want to lift that too far. But that's the territory they're in. The players aren't being paid fortunes. They're not at the top end of the game either. I think at the full-end professional level, a Premiership footballer can earn more in 1 week than a professional rugby player can in a season. So there's a big pay disparity between some sports. So that's for Douglas to work out what's best for them, what they can and can't afford, and move forward from there. But that's the sort of territory they're in, where other clubs are able to pay players for training and match time as well. And sometimes that training attendance is a big one. You know, the gym work over the winter months, the pre-season preparation to put, they call it putting gas in the tank when you start testing yourself endurance-wise over the summer to get yourself ready fitness-wise for the start of the season. So where players are being paid for that, it's always a little bit easier to go and do the work. But the work needs to be done. Douglas know where they are, and they know what they've got to do to get a little bit higher. And they weren't quite on the money this season, but fingers crossed for next.
And turning our attentions then to Vagabonds Men's out in County Sport ADM Langs Cheshire after being relegated last season. So it was a challenging time for Franzi Gamishas and the team in the last campaign, but much more positive in County Sport ADM Langs Cheshire and picking up some big scalps during the season as well.
Yeah, they won home and away against Ashton-under-Lyne, who were for a long stage the undefeated league leaders. So for Vagabonds to be able to go to Ashton and win with a bonus point and then do the same back in the Isle of Man and deny Ashton a bonus point. Those were two big performances for the squad. But they've lost a couple of games when perhaps they felt they should have won, and that ultimately cost them. The upside for them, though, is promotion and relegation isn't always as clear-cut once you get below Douglas's league. From level seven onwards, the organisers try and set up the leagues so there is the least amount of travelling involved for the clubs. So you don't want somebody like Duckenfield having to go to Carlisle. Duckenfield on the east side of Manchester and Carlisle are much, much further north. But it's what potentially you have is players getting on the road for 3 hours in each direction just to play a game of rugby on a Saturday afternoon. And that's a big disincentive for the players. So the RFU try to organise the leagues regionally so there's least amount of travelling distances. One downside to that policy is you get big mismatches, and there have been some tremendous thumpings in the counties 1-4 ADM leagues and a number of walkovers as well. We had Chorley, for example, refused to come to the Isle of Man, or were unable to come to the Isle of Man. And that's always disappointing, and that's the sort of area that Vagabonds are in. So it remains to be seen when they reshuffle at the end of the season, which is round about now, and take in the entries from the clubs who want to join the leagues to see how much interest there is at the bottom end. Sometimes the leagues expand. It's possible we'll see counties five. Other times they contract, so four might disappear and everybody gets pitched into three anyway. That will be more positive news for Vagabonds, but we do know that they're going to be missing a couple of players. Matty Jones, versatile in the back row or second row, he's off on his travels. We know Connor Gauchy's leaving the island. I'm not certain where he came from, Australia or South Africa, I think, but he's returning to where he came from. And I think Mitch Wells might be off as well. So they're going to be missing a couple of players in there. They've got to recruit wisely as well. I know they have an under-16s who are going to be coming under-17s at the start of the season. Any of those players that are ready to make the step up, obviously they're going to be fast-tracked in. But transition from junior rugby to adult is not quite as straightforward as it seems. There have to be a number of assessments about the players. Mental, physical and skills capabilities, and the coaches have to sign off on that. So there's a little bit of accountability there in the process. You can't just say you're 17 now, son, get into that front row. It doesn't quite work like that. It's a little bit more onerous and a little bit more responsibility taken by the clubs. But that's for Vagabonds next season. We'll wait and see where they lie at when the league reshuffle happens. It'll be happening any time soon. What they generally say is if you win your league, you're probably going to be promoted. And if you're bottom of your league, you're probably going to be relegated. But outside of that, we talk about the promotion and relegation being the top two and the bottom two. The leagues will be flexible depending on how many clubs they've got entering and whether they're going to expand or contract over the summer. So that stuff all complicated and goes on behind the scenes. That's all to come yet. But as soon as we get any news, obviously we'll report on it. But Vagabonds will probably look back, yeah, fairly successful, but wish perhaps they could have done a little bit better.
Well, sticking with Bala Fletcher and the aforementioned Vagabonds ladies and women's NC1 Northwest this season, a big transition season really for Vagabonds ladies. A lot of new players coming in, those who are just trying to build experience throughout the campaign, and a couple of big figures in the squad not involved this time around. But how much progress do you think this Vagabonds ladies team have made in such a tough division, and given the amount of changes they've had to go through this campaign?
Yeah, we've had a number of, I'm going to say old heads, but they're not that old, certainly significantly younger than me, but some of the more established players sort of actually taking a back seat or retiring completely. Natalie Bush, I think she's just turned 40. She's taken more of a back seat this season, only played one or two games. Corinna Daly's hung up her boots. She's waiting for, I think, knee surgery, if my memory serves me correctly. Apologies, Corinna, if that's wrong. So some of those players taken more of a backseat, and some of the youngsters coming in, and it's taken them a while to find their footing. But they're now, I think they're pretty much okay. They are finding their footing. Sophie Henry's made that change from back row into the back line, and she's capable of playing in both. She's been a revelation in the centres. We know Maylin Campbell's come into the squad. She's been amazing, whether she plays back row or in the centre. And a couple of other adjustments around the park with some new faces coming on. I know there's a couple of the girls have had to take some time out for children. Lauren Ellison had quite recently given birth. And Chloe Dillon as well on the wing. Chloe was pregnant earlier on in the season. So those players having to take a little bit of a backseat means they've got to bring new blood in. And that new blood's taken a little bit of time to gel. It finally did gel towards the end of the season. They had a couple of impressive performances. I think a second half against Broughton Park up at Bella Fletcher. And then in the final game of the season, they beat Eccles. So that's fair play for the girls for sticking with it. They're a resilient bunch, believe you me. They'll stick at it again next season in whatever league they find themselves in. But at the moment, it looks like they've finished bottom of NC1 Northwest. They'll be destined for whatever's below that, unless, of course, there's a restructure at the lower level of the women's game. But fair play to them. They're always buoyant. They're always happy. They've just had their players' day, I think, last Saturday, which involved all sorts of games in and around the bar. That's the best way to probably describe them. And I've seen some of the photographs popping up on their Facebook feed. So they've had a great season. They've finished it off in a great way last weekend. And fair play to them. They'll be back and sticking at it next season. And hopefully the results will come as that squad starts to get more game time together.
Taking a look towards some of the other clubs here on Ireland, particularly around the Manx competitions and also the Cheshire competitions as well. We had an all-Manx Cheshire Plate final taking place, which we saw Ramsey Swansea beating Western Vikings. So that was a big occasion on Ireland, but also as well Southern Nomads just missing out in the Cheshire competitions process to get to the final two. So how do you make the other Manx sides here, the likes of Ramsey, Western Vikings, Southern Nomads, and Castletown, of course, with their fledgling involvement, shall we say, this season. How have they fared, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, to describe the domestic season as anything but disappointing is, I think, the expression that's commonly used is to be putting lipstick on a pig. The domestic competition has really struggled since the COVID comeback, and that continued this season. The Manx Shield was disappointing for everybody in terms of the number of fixtures that didn't get played, because the likes of Castletown and Western Vikings had paper-thin squads. One or two injuries means they're not really capable of playing, and that became very frustrating for everybody. Essentially, Ramsey and Southern Nomads played each other on a regular basis for the Manx Shield. I think Ramsey had one game that they lost against Castletown, and Castletown turned up with two players. So Ramsey had tried to put a weakened side out, a sort of second team or the fringe involved players. And that meant that the Ramsey first team players who weren't playing actually went and played for Castletown. And ultimately, Ramsey ended up beating themselves. So it was a weird old competition. Moving away from that, because we'll come to the Manx Cup just in a few minutes' time. But moving away from that, Ramsey, Southern Nomads and Western Vikings all entered Cheshire competitions. Based on the previous season's results, I had a feeling that Cheshire RFU had got it wrong. They placed Ramsey and Western Vikings in the lower ranked competition, the Cheshire Plate, and they put Southern Nomads and Vagabonds in the higher ranked competition, the Cheshire Bowl. Unsurprisingly, because Ramsey had beaten everybody the previous season, Ramsey made it through to their final, and Southern Nomads and Vagabonds struggled. Western Vikings, they beat, I think it was Ellesmere Port. They had one fixture left against Oxton Parkonians. It could be the other way around, to be honest, but they were conceded that fixture. Port Sunlight, in fact, now my memory kicks in. Port Sunlight conceded the fixture because of pressure on their fixture list. Vikings made it through to the final. Of course, it was played here on Ireland as well. And Ramsey won that on a horrible day at Bella Fletcher, 28-0. That doesn't say a great deal, I don't think, for either club. What I think will be more important next season is that Ramsey maybe get graded in the higher competition and get a run of consistent fixtures. It's unlikely we're going to see an on-island final again. The Cheshire finals are supposed to be played midweek in February under floodlights, and this one was only brought to the island because it was the two Isle of Man clubs involved. It made no sense to have everybody decamp to somewhere in Cheshire on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night in February. That just made no sense at all. So fair play to everybody for a common sense decision. Next season, I don't know about Southern Nomads, Western Vikings and Vagabonds, but Ramsey definitely, the AGM was 2 weeks ago. Ramsey definitely committed to entering whatever Cheshire competition they're seeded into next season. If I'm a betting man, I'd say it was a Cheshire Bowl, because I think Cheshire got the seedings wrong, but that's a matter for Cheshire. Ramsey will have a good tilt at it, whatever it is. The others, we won't know until the Cheshire fixture list comes out, which shouldn't be too long now. I think deadline for entries is something like the end of May, middle of June, and that will come up very, very quickly, and we'll get to see what the fixtures are going to look like next season. For Ramsey and Southern Nomads, they've been able to pretty much get sides out, and when we got to the latter stages of the season, we were able to have a meaningful Manx Cup competition when Douglas and Vagabonds came back in. But domestically, we're probably going to struggle again next season with the Manx Shield. That remains to be seen what the local executive come up with in terms of a fixture structure. And I know they've got meetings ongoing all the time. So hopefully we'll get something a little bit better than we had last season. But it's trying to get a meaningful competition when you have only four sides, and the gulf between the side at the top and the side at the bottom in terms of playing standard is quite large. It's very awkward, and I'm not sure how we would go about it, but the executive, better brains up there, will be sorting that one out, and we'll obviously report on it as soon as we know what's going to happen.
Manx Radio's rugby correspondent Dave Christian there, and a quick update from the 2024 Europe Netball Open with just under 2 minutes gone in the third quarter. Republic of Ireland 24, United Arab Emirates 36.
Manx Radio Sport.
A look back there on the Isle of Man rugby season for 23-24, and it was busy again, not just there, but in the Isle of Man hockey scene over the last year. Once again, plenty of success stories across the divisions with league and cup titles enjoyed, along with the heartache of relegation for some. To take a look back on what's been another thriving hockey scene at all levels in this campaign, I spoke with our hockey correspondent Ben Cunningham about the highlights of the season, as well as what we could expect when things all start again in a few months' time. Ben, the season ended a few weeks ago and a busy season as always in Manx hockey, both with the mixed and indoor in the first few months. But our focus is going to be particularly, I think, on the men's and ladies seasons that took place towards the turn of the year. So let's just start very generally. In terms of either teams or players or anything else besides, what do you think were the standouts for you this season?
I think it's the way the Manx Hockey Association have structured the leagues this year, because they've looked really, really competitive. And we had the Manx Hockey Association Awards dinner last Friday, and it was very much noted by everyone there by how competitive all the leagues were from the top to the bottom.
And that's an important thing. One of the big things is, it can be a talking point at times, is say something like the step up between say the respective Division 1s and respective Premier Leagues as well. If they're competitive in and around below, how much extra incentive does that give those teams to continue going up the ladder?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, we've seen it in the cup competitions. For example, the men's plate, of course, the men's bowl didn't go ahead, but the teams that were due to play in the men's bowl came up and played in the men's plate. So that was Division 1 teams against Division 2 teams. And some Division 2 teams gave Division 1 teams a run for their money. So it was really good to see.
And from the Division 2 teams' perspectives as well, how good an experience will that be for some of those players who are, you know, not used to coming up against that level of opposition in the league above, but also those, maybe the younger players who are looking to maybe make the step up and learn a little bit from these teams?
Oh, it's huge because, of course, each club have got at least 2-3 teams in each respective league. And it shows then that they're knocking on the door, potentially maybe moving up into that higher team and taking the place from possibly maybe someone might not be, you know, who might not be showing the commitment or the, you know, or just getting a bit ahead of themselves. But definitely, it's definitely something for the players in the lower leagues to look at and go, right, well, if we want to get the promotion, that's what we want to be looking at doing.
OK, let's take a look through the some of the respective divisions, I guess. So we'll start with the respective Premier Leagues. We'll start with the Women's Premier League. A change at the top this year. Vikings back on top this year in the Women's Premier League. Dethroning, shall we say, the Castletown Ladies A side that stunned a lot of people last season to win the league. So what was the difference, do you think, for Vikings this year in winning back that Women's Premier League?
I think Vikings learnt from their mistakes last year, and they knew that they had to rectify what happened last year, and they certainly did it this season. And Castletown, well, they came runners up this year, but they did claim the Ladies Cup in the respective cup competitions. So it wasn't all doom and gloom for Castletown. Okay, they didn't get the league, but they did get a cup out of the out of it and the runners up spot in the Ladies Prem.
And looking at the Men's Premier League, and obviously one of the big headlines will be Vikings Men's A taking the Men's Premier League title and bringing an end to an era of dominance, really, from a phenomenal backers A team. Vikings Men's A winning the Men's Premier League for the first time in over 30 years. How big a thing is that for Vikings?
Oh, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. And it was well noted again at the awards dinner. The achievement, like you say, 30 plus years since they last did it. And as we heard in the season, only 2 or 3 of them players that were playing still this season were alive when it happened last. So it's a massive achievement, but it just shows how much Vikings have got coming through their squads.
That brings me on to it. Is that one of the reasons why maybe Vikings have been able to get it over the line this year, that they've got this next crop of players stepping in alongside, as you've already mentioned, some of the experienced heads already in there who know the game so well?
Absolutely. They've got such a young youth and younger, older players coming through each team. And, you know, the future does look bright for Vikings, as well as every other club. Every other clubs this season really have shown, from the young age to their older age, just how much of experienced players they've got coming through and how many potentially really players that could be hitting the headlines very shortly coming through.
Well, stepping away from the Premier League at the respective Division 1, so just very quickly for those who just need a bit of a reminding, who's going to be making the step up into the respective Premier Leagues next season?
So in men's Division 1, we had Valkyries B. They have got the promotion to the Premier League. And then in the ladies' Division 1, Ramsey A took it on goal difference.
Very close to that particular one, ladies' Division 1 going right down to the wire. But for those two respective teams making their way in, Valkyries B going up to the men's Premier League, Ramsey A going back into the women's Premier League, what do they need to stay in the division this time, do you think?
I think really they need to just make sure that they can try and keep the teams that they've had this season into next season, and potentially they could cause a few upsets. I mean, Ramsey were definitely gutted. They got relegated last season, but then they've made amends of it and got straight back up this season. So it just shows, you know, that they're determined to make sure that their Premier League status is still there. As for Valkyries, though, I think they're going to be really glad, really proud to have not one but two Valkyries teams in the men's Premier League next season.
And looking elsewhere as well, let's in terms of the respective Division 2s as well, again, just a quick reminder for those who don't know, who is going to be heading up into the respective Division 1s?
So Backers Men's D won Men's Division 2, and in Ladies Division 2, Castletown D had an absolute stormer of a season, and they went on and took Ladies Division 2.
Starting with that Castletown D side in Ladies Division 2, it really was a dominant season. Some might say mathematically throughout the campaign, the most dominant one across all the divisions. Does that bode well for them, do you think, going into Division 1, just how much they controlled Ladies Division 2?
Absolutely, and it'll definitely be something to look for to try and make sure that they can match next season in Ladies Division 1. Of course, they had such a fantastic season. They were such a good team as well. If they can keep that team together for next season, then they're going to really be definitely one to watch. As for men's division two title holders, Backers Men's D, that come as a surprise to me. I must admit, that did come as a surprise.
I don't know,
to me.
You've made some comments before, not in a negative way, but in terms of, shall we say, the experience in that Backers D squad. But it's borne fruit and they're going up a division.
Absolutely. And yeah, like you say, the experience has proven itself and they've gone on and took the division, and they're now going up into men's division one.
And elsewhere, just taking a look, this is one thing that you pointed out a couple of times during the season, just how healthy the under-15s league has been looking as well this season, because it has expanded to include more teams this campaign. How encouraging is that, that there are more teams and more players getting involved at a younger level?
Absolutely, and I mean, the under-15s leagues, as you say, have been looking really good. I mean, if it's anything to go by, the under-15s league has just been as good as the senior leagues this season. Really close competitive games. Of course, Valkyries under-15s took the title from Christmas to the end of this season, and the other title, which was from September through to Christmas, was took by Backers, but runners-up both times were Harlequins.
Not just the domestic leagues as well. The Isle of Man had plenty of squads, both at senior and junior level, competing in the respective England Hockey Championships this season. There were some great headlines and, in fact, success in some places last season. No silverware this time around, but good progress from some of those teams in there this season.
Absolutely. Every Ireland team has had a great year. Okay, nothing's come back to the island, no trophies, unfortunately, but everybody has had such a good campaign in this season, and it's definitely been really good. And like we say, we're really proud of all our youngsters and our seniors for representing the island so well.
And away from the actual playing side of things, one crucial aspect of hockey every single week while it's on is the officials, the umpires as well, making sure that there are enough to staff all the games to take place, because there are a lot of games to cover across the divisions every Saturday, and sometimes games in midweek as well. How proud is the MHA in terms of being able to make sure games can go ahead, and that there have been a good enough amount of umpires to make sure the whole season can go ahead as smoothly as possible?
They've been really proud, because some umpires have been really dedicated and actually gave up their whole entire Saturday to maybe be based at one place just to make sure all the fixtures go ahead. And it was noted at the MHA do by Peter Foxen, who is the in charge of the Umpires Association, just how proud he is of everyone for giving up their time and putting in such a sterling effort this season. And George Powell was named as Umpire of the Year this year from the nominations. So big congratulations to him, but very well deserved. And to be honest with you, every umpire deserved recognising this season, because everyone has put in such a sterling effort.
And going forward as well, finally, just on this point, it's not just something around hockey, but a lot of sports as well. There's always a call for more umpires, more officials, referees, whichever title they have in which respect sports, to take part. So two-pronged question just to finish it. How are the numbers generally within the MHA for umpires? And is there any way that the MHA might look to keep, continue boosting the numbers, make sure there are more umpires for the future?
Yeah, the numbers are looking good. We could do with more. So if you're listening to this, please, you know, speak to your speak to your clubs to get more information. But definitely the MHA have done really well this year. We've had umpires from across come over to give tutoring, which has been really great. And yeah, it's just, like I say, if people are out there listening thinking, maybe I fancy giving it a go, please, by all means, speak to someone from the Manx Hockey Association, speak to your club, and I'm sure they'll guide you in the right direction. But numbers are looking really good, but like I say, we could do with more. But this season we've done really well, and just like I say, big shout out to all the umpires, especially the ones that have been doing more than maybe two or three games a weekend.
Manx Radio's hockey correspondent Ben Cunningham there. And just another update on the 2024 Europe Netball Open, with just under 3 minutes of the third quarter remaining of the current game. It is currently Republic of Ireland 34, United Arab Emirates 46. Well, that brings to a conclusion the final Saturday Sport Classified programme of the 23-24 season. Thank you to you, the listeners, for tuning in and supporting our coverage throughout the sporting campaigns over the last few months. It really would not be the same without you. And to all who contribute, whether it be scores or match reports and more besides, thank you so much for getting in touch and helping us out here throughout the course of the season. A huge thank you, of course, as well to our Manx Radio correspondents throughout the respective sports this season, Tony Meppham, Dave Christian, Ben Cunningham, and many more besides who've contributed throughout the last few months. And also to our other Saturday Sport Classified presenters throughout the campaign, not just from myself, Rob Pritchard, but also a huge thank you to our other presenters, Dave Moore, Simon Quine, and Simon Clark. Well, thank you very much indeed, and we will be back in a couple of months' time when the new season starts to kick into life. But in the meantime, we want to wish you a very pleasant 2024 Isle of Man TT races getting underway on Monday, the 27th of May, and also a very pleasant summer beyond that. We will now be handing over and joining Christy De Haven over on FM Frequency with Saturday Live Lounge. But from us here on Saturday Sport Classified, until next time, it is bye for now.
Manx Radio Sport.